Clone Wars spread.
Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network's Look Back at the Clone Wars micro-series.
Against this threat, upon the Jedi Knights falls the duty to lead the newly formed Army of the Republic.
While the full-length Clone Wars show is on summer hiatus, come back to RepublicForces.com this summer and join Dan, Jen, Jerry, Barrett, and Nathan as they look back at all 25 episodes of the Genndy Tartakovsky Clone Wars series that aired from 2003 through 2005.
You have been selected for this task because you are the best, the elite. You all know what to do.
In these matters, trust your insight, we do. May the Force be with you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network and our continuing coverage of the Tartakovsky micro-series from a few years back. We're going to be talking about Chapter 24, and joining me is Jerry.
Hey, guys.
Barrett.
Hey, everybody. It's Barrett, Master Collect Them All from the forums, your Swan Holocron Enhancer.
Nathan P. Butler.
Hey, everybody. Also putting out a lot of EU review stuff this summer. Stop by solosound.net. There's my plug for the end of the series.
And Jen.
Hey, guys.
Once again, we are going to be discussing Chapter 24 of the Tartakovsky micro-series. And just like last episode, we're going to break this one up into the Battle of Coruscant and the events that take place on Nelvan, which kind of makes it the exciting part and the boring part. But as Nathan has pointed out, that's kind of how it's been split up in current continuity. So it kind of works out for everybody. So we'll return to Coruscant, where Grievous has just burst into the Chancellor's office in an attempt to kidnap Palpatine. Shaak-Ti and Palmadonna and Roran Karab and a few clones and Senate guards are there to try to ward him, fight him off. And all kinds of fun ensues.
He kicks butt! Grievous is awesome against clones in this series, and once again, it draws that stark parallel between this series and the current one. He is amazing. I mean, he's acting so fast that you almost think you've missed something. You almost feel like you have to rewind to get all the attack moves that he puts into any of these fight scenes.
You know, I'm so impressed with Grievous here that there are times where I think to myself, man, Palpatine, you're lucky that Grievous in the heat of the battle, and he's just so pissed that he doesn't just grab you and kill you, you know, because I'm guessing Grievous has no idea the dual identity. It's like, could you just imagine if something like weird like that happened? It's like, oh man, I actually killed the Chancellor. I hope Darth Sidious isn't mad. I mean, you almost just expect for him to just lose it and crush him at any moment. That's how I feel about his intensity and his power here. To where I, you know, I agree with you, Nathan. This is the General Grievous that I wish we had seen in episode 3. And, you know, like I said a couple episodes ago, that I kind of wish was actually introduced in episode 2 a little bit, even as a background character, so that we could really feel how menacing he is to this entire Clone Wars story.
Wouldn't that be great, though? He accidentally kills Palpatine, and then, you know, he's like, uh-oh, Sidious is going to be mad, and he's putting in calls to Sidious, but Sidious isn't answering, and he's...
Hell, he won't even talk to me.
I think he's mad. Yeah, exactly.
You know, Jerry, to your point, you make a really good point there, because when we first see Palpatine, you know, he's sipping on tea, and he's kind of sitting back, and he's watching the battle, and, you know, you had made a point in an earlier show how they, when they showed Palpatine, and then we showed Darth Sidious, it would almost look like two different characters. Like they tried to keep it separate. So, you know, it kind of left the people who didn't really know the story. You didn't really know if it was Palpatine or Sidious, you know, with the teeth and the whole thing. Here, you know that he's Darth Sidious and he's watching his plan come to fruition. And to your point of Grievous killing him, when Grievous smashes that window, Palpatine gives this terrified look. You know, that we've never seen Palpatine give in any of the cartoon series, in any of the live action series. So he's been really calm and collective because this is his plan. He gives a look like Grievous is going to kill him. So you might have something there.
I kind of wonder if Palpatine would have had it in him to say, oh no, Grievous is actually going to try to kill me. And he does something in front of a bunch of clones in a, you know, episode 3 attacking Mace Windu sort of way, and then Palpatine has to, like, kill all the witnesses. I mean, there's a Marvel what if inside all this, I think would be or I guess Star Wars Tales, I should probably reference that, but there's a Star Wars Tales story in here, a what if of, like, you know, Palpatine had to expose himself at a time that sound bad, that Palpatine had to become Darth Sidious in front of a bunch of people when he didn't want to.
Or to take that another step, Grievous had accidentally, kind of like we saw Savage Opress in the past season, he accidentally does kill Palpatine, and Dooku has to step up and finish the war. And what would have happened in the Star Wars universe if suddenly it was Dooku's will and whim that decided the future events? There's the tales for you.
I agree.
Back to Grievous for a second. I think one of the other things that makes him really different from the Clone Wars, the current Clone Wars Grievous, is that he doesn't talk very much here. And he's usually got that stupid cackly coughing laugh thing going on in the current series, and he doesn't shut up. And in this, he's really kind of quiet and brooding, and he's just, lack of expression is what does the talking for him and his action. And I find that way more intimidating than anything that could possibly come out of his mouth. So I like that they do that. I wish they'd shut him up more in the current series.
I agree totally. I mean, back to what we were saying a few episodes ago, even about the voice, I think a handful of us, if not all of us, kind of agree that this voice was even better or seemed like it fit the character better. Maybe it's just because we heard it first, that especially with the voice that we get with Matthew Wood now, which I'm not a huge fan of, I would totally like to see his actions more than hear his vain boasting.
Now, speaking of voices, how about Roron Korob, the Ithorian? I mean, this guy's, he's in the running for the role of Banshee in the next X-Men film, right? I mean, he's able to bring down the ceiling by yelling with his, was it, however many throats he has or mouths or whatever it is that are on his body.
Wasn't the number just four?
Yeah, four throats.
Is it four? Like,
yeah. Really? Four?
Is it? Four throats, two mouths.
But it's a forced scream, and we don't usually see forced screams most of the time. It made for an interesting way of taking that particular species and giving them a different Jedi attribute than we're used to, unlike, you know, Kit Fisto giving all Nautilans the ability to make underwater bowling balls.
What I really like about that scene is right before Grievous bursts in the room, and you hear him kicking butt in the other room, and I'm pretty sure at some point I heard a chainsaw in there, and they're all kind of huddled in front of the elevator. It's the Ithorian who reaches down and does the cliche hitting the elevator button repeatedly to try to make it come faster.
Yeah, without looking. That's funny. Yeah, that was great. Awesome. And he pulls that kind of throat force push kind of thing, technique. He throws that out a couple times. And how awesome is it to have a hammerhead Jedi? I mean, this was the first time I saw another hammerhead since episode 4, I think. I mean, that I noticed out there. And for him to be a Jedi, I was like, wow, that's great. That's great.
Now, there were a few Ithorians in the crowd of the pod race.
I was too busy looking for E.T.
That was in the Senate.
So it's basically what we were saying, I guess it was last episode. This character gets an awesome force ability, kicks a lot of butt, helps protect Palpatine, and the one who actually won the Cartoon Network website contest, Volvic Mon, gets what? He gets trapped in a bubble, I guess it was. I think that's the one it was. He gets captured or in trouble, and he needs Anakin and Obi-Wan to save the day. And before that, he gets to strut and strike a pose in front of the battle on Munalist. Losing is what you needed to do in this contest.
Isn't that pretty much always the case with those kind of contests, though? The winner of the Toy Fair Pick the Next or Fan Choice Award sits on pegs for months and months. The second, third, and 25th place runner-ups get made, and you can't find them ever. Yeah, I'm looking at you, ice cream maker guy.
You know, it's almost as if they already had the thing animated, and then they're like, oh, crap, the Wolfman won. Are you freaking kidding?
You know, in this series, though, that's not really, that wouldn't be that surprising, because as we'll talk about, or we can just talk about it now, in the bonus material, you find out that whole coughing explanation, they were given that, I think they said, 10 days before that episode was supposed to air, and they kind of made up that scene where Mace crushes Grievous's chest. So really, it wouldn't be surprising to find out that at the last second they said, oh, this guy won instead. Maybe they thought those two were going to win, or one of them was going to win, and that's why they had those scenes ready, and they're like, oh, crap, we got to go do this guy.
And isn't it great on the choking thing that Lucas can toss out a directive very late in the production process to make them force that in there, only for Lucas to turn around and say, you know what, he's been coughing the whole freaking war. Isn't that wonderful? Thanks, George.
That's kind of like where his vision contradicts his vision.
Like it was going to be 12 movies in 9, then 6? Or 1, then 12, then 9, then 6? Yeah.
Or they had to reshoot the scene where he goes back and picks up Anakin's lightsaber? Have we hit all of our repetitive points yet?
Old Anakin Skywalker never had eyebrows, dang it.
You know, it's kind of interesting that all three Jedi involved in this contest were like fairly well-known, familiar-looking Episode 4 cantina creatures.
Well, they were before the special edition, and the Wolfman got cut out for Elephant Man.
But that was the whole point, that Volvif Mon, Thau Modama, and Roron Korob were purposely chose species that we saw in the cantina, turned them into Jedi, and then turned them into that contest. So it's not a coincidence. That was orchestrated.
What? I mean, why was that purposeful? I mean, why did they choose the cantina?
That's just what they chose.
Because everybody loves Tales from Mos Eisley Cantina. Yeah. New York Times bestseller for...
several hours.
15 minutes.
We see the Ithorian using his throat trick a second time, and then Grievous goes into like this Robotech Veritech fighter like alternate mode type thing. Like, it's okay, that's all right, I can condense into this little compact form, and then I'm far more wind resistant. So it's like, what?
I actually love that this series did some things with Grievous that were never explored in the actual movie. When we actually see Grievous brought to life, as it were, as close to life as he can be. But I mean, when Grievous first shows up, like all of his joints expand, kind of like a bug, and expands and throws out its wings to intimidate a predator. Or in this case, he kind of compacts to deal with the elements. I mean, Grievous being able to do those different things with his body, other than the spider walk when he lost hands, would have been something cool to see them play around with a little bit more, or even to see our current series play around with. That's something they've never gone into, with the exception of Lair of Grievous, where he again does the spider walk because he's losing appendages.
Well, and Dan, I agree with you. It's kind of cool. I guess my reaction now in 2011 is just like, wow, I mean, Grievous is doing something like that, and it's kind of cool, but it's just so out of nowhere now. And maybe it's just because I'm, based on your point here, I'm just so used to the Grievous who can do nothing.
Well, they sort of do the same thing with the Jedi, though. They let the Jedi have powers that have a little more nuance than what we usually see. I mean, Shaak-Ti taking, was it the cape of Grievous that she wraps around the train as it's heading out? So that he zips and gets yanked away? I mean, you don't usually see that kind of finesse in the films, at least, where Jedi are just subtly manipulating something as an aspect of battle. It's almost always big force pushes, force chokes, force leaps, deflecting stuff with their lightsaber. In this case, they really tended to think, and we talked about this with choreography before, it seemed like they really tended to think, what are some cool things that we could do that maybe haven't been done, or some nuances we could do, because we can just animate whatever we want. We don't have to worry about what special effects will do.
Nathan, I loved that scene. When they're jumping around the train station, and trains are zipping through, and hither and thither, and a million miles an hour, and they're almost getting hit, and the guard droids are getting whacked, and it's all for naught because Grievous is right there, but then in a classic supervillain monologuing moment, Shaak-Ti's tying his cape to a train that's about to depart, and he's gone. That's just a great culmination of that scene.
Well, not only that, it's not that it's about to depart, it's that she hits a button to make it leave, too. So, I mean, she's doing the whole thing. And, I mean, by the way, I appreciate that a little bit more, because that's just some, I think, simple force powers that we can probably all agree that we've seen Jedi do over and over again. I mean, they can move things and manipulate things. I mean, that's telekinesis that Jedi can do. But I just found it a little odd that with this planet-wide emergency, the trains are still running their routes. I mean, no, I just thought that was kind of silly, actually. It was great action. I mean, for this cartoon, it was fun-looking, but I couldn't help but to think, those things would have been grounded. There's no way those things are zipping past, you know, with what's going on the planet. But anyway, that's nitpicking. I'll shut up now.
Perhaps the guy running the train system's last name was Mussolini. The trains will run on time. Anybody? History people? Never mind.
Nitpicking. Why are the trains on tracks? Don't they have flying cars and flying transporters anyway? So why are they on rails in the first place? So we could all nitpick. You know, I'm with you, Jerry.
Not everybody can afford a flying car.
Right. This is the underground. They were so nice and clean. But no, honestly, when I saw the forest trick where she ties the cape and then Sidious notices and the other Jedis don't notice Sidious noticing. And I like that appreciative look that he gives, you know, because he respects the Jedi. It's not like he's Darth Maul or like he is Grievous, where they don't respect the Jedi at all. You know, he respects the Jedi. He understands what he's up against. Get that scene of appreciation, to me, gives more a lot of character to Palpatine, because it's showing that he's really a mastermind to have to bring these intelligent warriors down. And I loved it. It was really quick, but it adds a lot to the story.
I didn't almost see it as respect in so much as, perhaps you're right, but sometimes I wonder if Palpatine just kind of lets things play out a little bit longer than they need to, just because he's kind of auditioning. Like, hey, is there any of these Jedi that I wouldn't mind trying to turn? It's like, ooh, you know, Shaak-Ti, that was a pretty good move. Let me take note of that. No, you just got whooped by Grievous. All right, bye.
I like that auditioning. Palpatine is always out for the lookout for the next best Padawan. You know what I'm saying? If this one doesn't work out, let's see about this guy.
I mean, in the unlikely event that Anakin gets all of his limbs cut off and gets burned up on a lava planet, that would ever happen. I need some backups.
Going back to Shaak-Ti for a second, I love that scene because they did something similar with this in the last episode with Dooku, where he kind of grabs Grievous' foot and throws him off balance. It was like very minimal use of the Force and really clever use of it. And I feel like Tartakovsky's been using that a bit in this series for characters where you may not really buy the big kind of brute force type methods of operating. And you don't really see that much in the movies. And I like this because it's kind of sneaky and clever and much more interesting than just, Hulk smash kind of fighting.
Now, before Dan shuffles us off here to Nelvan, as I'm sure he's about to, because we're going a little long here on the Coruscant part, there are some more issues. Again, I said that we go back to sort of the Labyrinth of Evil, Reversal of Fortune, micro-series stuff, and how they come together with anything else as we came to different issues. In this case, both the Elite Squadron Battlefront video games, that's for PSP and Nintendo DS, and the Labyrinth of Evil novel, use train stations as locations during the Battle of Coruscant. In Elite Squadron, X2, he's the heroic cloned Jedi-type trooper character. He faces off with General Grievous in a train station before Grievous ever even gets to Palpatine's office. Like, the battle interrupts them getting their medals. He goes off, kind of holds off Grievous for a bit, but then Grievous escapes and still makes his way to Palpatine, obviously. They never actually board a train, though. In Labyrinth of Evil, they actually board a train. Mace Windu gets Palpatine away on a train. Here, they're in a train station. So the trains keep playing into it, but they play into it in completely different ways, basically. And the battle actually is much longer, much, much longer in the novel Order 66 than it is in any other interpretation, a matter of days and days and days. And that nearly caused us some big issues when we were working on the dates for the Essential Atlas, as far as, how to date certain issues with Revenge of the Sith. But Leland Chi pretty much turned around and overrode Karen Travis and said, no, we're going to use the dates that are in, everything else, not what she decided to shoehorn into Order 66 because she just wanted to do it her way. I would also note here that from the standpoint of parallels, here we have Shaak-Ti versus Grievous, and that's a theme that we return to in Revenge of the Sith's deleted scenes, because then Shaak-Ti was supposed to be killed by Grievous aboard the Invisible Hand, but of course that got cut. She's one of these characters that we thought was left to die here. She winds up showing up later. She was supposed to die in Revenge of the Sith, but nope, she doesn't. But then there's supposed to be another death scene in the Jedi Temple with Anakin, but nope, they cut that out so that she would finally eventually wind up meeting her fate in The Force Unleashed. I mean, this is a character that was like marked for death constantly, and this was one of those times we were meant to sort of get a sense that maybe Grievous was going to kill her, but of course he doesn't within this series here. So a lot of kind of intersecting continuity with this particular chapter, but not a lot of places where those intersections actually overlap. It's more like they sort of have glancing blows against each other and then ricochet off in their own separate directions.
All right. Now on the other side of the galaxy, literally, on Nelvan, we see Anakin. Well, not now. I mean, this has happened every 5 minutes or so throughout this episode. But Anakin has been shuffled off on what will be his final test by Obi-Wan after so kindly volunteering him to help out the blue people with their problem. Anakin will go through a cave where he will have his version of Luke's Force vision from the cave on Dagobah, which will reveal to him that he's going to have some issues. The culmination of which is a weird Darth Vader face thing with eyeballs, which is totally weird.
The Trial of Spirit, Looking into the Mirror.
Okay, so now we have Anakin being told he's Darth Vader again for the first time, or is this after the Citadel? Will we ever know? But this time, he is told the whole story. He will fall in love, the woman who's being taken away, and he turns into Darth Vader. The whole story is told to him now. So what is the explanation? Why does he not know that he's going to be Darth Vader?
Well, it doesn't necessarily jump out and actually say, hey, this is you with a freaky looking mask on and a respiratory problem. It just kind of ends with that. And if he has any sense, hearing Padme scream Anakin, he might think, oh, I may not be heading down a good path.
Oh, I kind of think that's he has to know it's him, because it's showing in the whole Force vision or whatever it is. The main character has a mechanical arm, so he has to know that that's him and that this is a possible future. And, you know, it's another time where he's being told that he's going to be Darth Vader.
But see, there's that word. You use the key word there, possible future. I mean, you take Luke in the cave and it's what could happen. How dark could he go? Galen Marek, a.k.a. Starkiller, goes through something similar in The Force Unleashed, where he faces that alternate version of himself. I think that's the Jedi Temple DLC level or whatever it was. But it's showing what could happen if they go dark. And of course, Anakin, being the chosen one, being kind of arrogant in that sense, of course he's not going to think that he's going to go dark. Oh yeah, that's what could happen if I turn dark. That's not me. You know, even if there is a warning. I mean, he's done other dark side-y stuff before, but it's like it never fazes him. It never makes him realize that he's going to go dark. It's more just like, yeah, whatever. You know, he shies away from all of those warnings, possibly because the Jedi Council just doesn't punish him enough for what he does when he goes off the rails. He could have been warned. Somebody could have told him to his face, you are going to be the next Sith apprentice, Sparky. And he probably would have still shrugged it off and said, yeah, no, I won't. And just completely ignore the warning.
Well, see, I didn't see that as his mechanical arm. I saw that as the evil thing snapped off the Vision little creature's arm. And then after his woman picked out the pieces, a little part grew out that was his new arm. That looked to me as this person uses a little bit of that evil as a tool, and every time he uses it to defend his fellow villagers or to help people out, it grows and becomes worse and becomes worse and becomes worse, till in the end it is an uncontrollable monster that he has let loose, which is kind of what Anakin does.
Yeah, I took it as a personification of the dark side, almost, where he's using the dark side more and more, and it kind of consumes him. And in doing that, he loses everything that he cares about, and then he's kind of lost. And that's when the Darth Vader mask shows up. I didn't think it was that obvious, since I can see how Anakin wouldn't really get a total, like, a premonition out of that, more like a warning.
Yeah, especially this Anakin, because he's an idiot.
You know, the first time I saw it, I thought that what we were seeing was the background of what happened to the Nelvanians. It actually, I had to go back and rewatch it years ago when this was first aired, because it's not until near the end that I realized, oh, that's supposed to be Anakin. I thought what he was seeing was like a Force vision of what had happened to all the Nelvanian males that he was trying to go save. I never made that initial connection way, way back when. Not for the first half of it, at least. I think there's one thing we can take as a lesson from this episode, though. If you ever run across a possessed Etch-a-Sketch, run.
So Anakin wakes up from his little vision, and lo and behold, he was in the bowels of the Techno Union stronghold the entire time, and he comes face to face with what has become of the Nelvan warriors.
Bob dun, from dun, Fight dun. Club.
You know, I have to admit, when I first watched this subplot, I thought to myself, wow, this is really stupid. Why are they showing us this? Now that I watch it and I understand where it goes, the fact that it ties into something Separatist-related, to me, saves it. I still don't find it terribly entertaining, especially considering it's playing opposite of the Coruscant battle. But right now, sitting among you guys talking this, I think that little subplot's fine.
All right, I want to thank everybody for tuning in for this second-to-last episode of our summer programming. Invite everyone to come back next week to hear us discuss the conclusion of the Tartakovsky micro-series.
See you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
To be concluded!
See you later, Rockstar.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
And Marvelicious Toys Enhancer. I guess I can call them holocrons too. Do they have holocrons in the Marvel Universe? So I'm ready to rock, Rockstar. I'm ready to tart Mykowski.
Are you ready to just say hi, everybody, and shut up?
You're tart doing the editing, awesome. Brother. I'm just giving awesome. You material to work with. Okay.
Time limit.
Okay, yeah, I'm here now. Let me make sure this is recording at all. I'm just going to say screw it to the other me, because the other me just f***ed up everything around here for me.
Evidence that Nathan's got multiple personalities or something. I just can't stand the other me. Okay.
And loop it. Number?
Okay, guys, I'm gonna have to mute you guys while I try to figure out where we left off, because I can't tell which is the recording and which is live. Hang on.
Because it all sounds like crap, don't it? I mean.
Speaking of that Darth Vader with the eyes, I have a hat. They made a hat at Walmart for kids that had that exact kind of tribal Darth Vader, vision. And I think I have that hat, and I'm bringing it to C6. So if you see my son wearing it, come on up, and I'll give you a Rockstar's phone number.
What? What the crap?
Where's Rockstar?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm muted. I'm talking. I'm doing the outro, and you guys are cutting in on me, and I'm yelling at you. Nobody can hear me.
Stop it, you! That was my gin impression. Thank you. I'm kidding. She doesn't sound like that. She just may say
not
that.
Not at all.
She said, you know she's saying that kind of stuff when she's muted. Barrett, stop disagreeing all the time.
Makes for a good show, Nathan.
And then she unmutes and is like, you know, you're right.